Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 201, Energy Psychiatry and Emotional Freedom with Judith Orloff, MD.
Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast with your host, Dr. Dave. Coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area, Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
The way I'm defining emotional freedom is that it's the ability to own the moment with any emotion that you're going through, and that you have the capacity to breathe and pause and center yourself and make a choice about how you respond to anything, so that you can have your center in all interactions rather than just simply having all your buttons pushed and reacting like most people do, where it's a form of empowerment when it comes to emotions. Also presenting emotions as a path to spiritual and intuitive awakening, in that each emotion that we go through, it can be fear, it could be anger, it could be jealousy, whatever it is, I'm asking people in the book to frame that in terms of how can this emotion help me to spiritually grow, expand my heart, and to become a more loving person.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Judith Orloff. Judith Orloff, MD, is an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA and author of the 2009 book, Emotional Freedom: Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. She's spoken at medical schools, hospitals, universities, the APA, Fortune Magazine's Most Powerful Women's Summit, and alternative and traditional health forums. She graduated from USC School of Medicine, completed a four-year psychiatric residency program at UCLA, and currently mentors UCLA medical students and psychiatry residents in training. Her best-selling books include Positive Energy, Guide to Intuitive Healing, and Second Sight. Positive Energy is a National and Los Angeles Times bestseller, which has been translated into 24 languages. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Judith Orloff, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I found out about you and your book as a result of a mailing my friend, Dr. Ron Alexander, sent out to his subscriber list. And he doesn't usually send out promotions for other people's books. So I thought you must be pretty special.
Oh, well, thank you. I was honored that Ron sent out for Emotional Freedom.
Yes, well, I don't know if you're aware of it, but he and I have done workshops together at Esalen and in Hawaii and in Europe, and I seem to recall him asking me more than once if I knew you.
Wow. Well, now we meet.
Yeah, because your name definitely rang a bell, you know, as soon as I saw it on the list. He's talked about her. I know he has.
Uh-huh.
So as a result of the two podcast series I'm doing, I'm going through books at about the rate of one a week. And as a result of that, plus having been a psychologist in California long enough to see a lot of psychological crazes come and go, I have to confess I've become a bit jaded, I think, when it comes to self-help books. So I must confess that despite Ron's endorsement, I initially approached your book with a bit of a jaundiced eye, but I have to say you quickly won me over.
Oh, well, I'm so happy. What won you over?
Well, I think that it was your self-disclosure. One of the things that helped me to do that was your liberal use of self-disclosure. It always helps me to see where a person's coming from, how their ideas are rooted in their own life, and whether they're willing to cop to their own struggles. And you get high marks from me in all those areas. You feel like a kindred soul, and I want you to feel very comfortable in this interview.
Okay, well, thank you. Part of how I teach, and And my techniques that I used, my approach to writing emotional freedom, was that I present both the neurobiology of emotions, the spirituality of emotions, the psychology, and the subtle energy of emotions. And when I deal with transforming each emotion in various chapters, I reveal how I have and continue to deal with the emotion in my own life, the triumphs and the struggles, and what has worked, because people really need strategies to deal with negative emotions and how to transform them. And so I'm glad that my personal revelations, you know, have touched you, because it really did come from my heart. And as I was writing the book, with each chapter, for instance, if I was dealing with how to transform frustration with patience, one chapter, I set my life, is, you know, according to that, and I get to experience all the frustration and patience that, you know, I can handle during that time of writing. So it's funny, when you write, you set a tone for something. And so as I was writing, you know, I went deeper with these emotions myself.
And, you know, the tone of the book is very conversational as well. I think the reader really feels that you're speaking to them. I certainly had that experience. And I imagine that you and I have other connections in common in addition to Ron Alexander. For example, you cite Dean Radin in one of your early chapters, and I actually interviewed him for this show quite recently as well.
Oh, yes. He's fantastic. I love Dean. We've been friends for years.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, well, the title of your newest book, which you've already mentioned, is Emotional Freedom, which either fortunately or unfortunately conjures up associations of EFT, or Emotional Freedom Technique, which recent guests have discussed. And I believe you intend something different than EFT. So perhaps we should begin with you telling us what you mean by emotional freedom.
Well, I'm glad you made that distinction, because I'm using a term that has nothing to do with the tapping technique, which is EFT. But the way I'm defining emotional freedom is that it's the ability to own the moment with any emotion that you're going through, and that you have the capacity to breathe and pause and center yourself and make a choice about how you respond to anything, so that you can have your center in all interactions, rather than just simply having all your buttons pushed and reacting like most people do, where it's a form of empowerment when it comes to emotions. Also presenting emotions as a path to spiritual and intuitive awakening, in that each emotion that we go through, it can be fear, it could be anger, it could be jealousy, whatever it is, I'm asking people in the book to frame that in terms of how can this emotion help me to spiritually grow, expand my heart, and to become a more loving person. So to look at the spiritual impetus behind each difficult emotion, because in the book I'm presenting our experience here in life, in this body, as a way to learn from these energies called emotions, and to be able to really become facile with them, so that we kind of get the lessons of being here and learn to work with what we're given, you know, which is hard, because, you know, so many of these emotions are wrenching and can just tear your heart out, you know, and are just so intense. However, you know, we all go through them, and I'm presenting each emotion in spiritual terms to really ask yourself, how can this be my teacher, instead of how this is my tormentor?
Yes, and I think that's really part of the originality of this book, is that approach. And I'm going to, later on, we'll kind of step through some of those specific emotional, spiritual challenge transformations that you cover. You've come up with your own unique synthesis here, which you call energy psychiatry. And again, the reference to energy might make one think of EFT, but I know we're not supposed to. What do you mean by energy psychiatry?
Well, energy psychiatry is a kind of a subspecialty of psychiatry that I'm developing, which combines traditional medicine, including biology, neurobiology, and everything that goes along with that, and traditional psychiatry, along with spirituality and an appreciation of subtle energies and intuition. So I want to combine all worlds when it comes to appreciating emotions. And part of energy psychiatry and the framework I really use to present emotions is that we experience emotions two ways, one of which we process it through our linear mind. I'm depressed. I can't stand this. I wish it was over. But then we have a second way of processing it with our intuition, which is our gut feeling or the nonverbal, still small voice inside that tells us the truth about things. That voice can sense into the deeper meaning of the emotion and why we're experiencing it. And so in the beginning of the book, I draw that dichotomy, you know, saying we experience emotions with our mind. We also experience it with our intuition. And what I'm asking people to do in energy psychiatry is to use the intuition to find a deeper meaning. So you're not stuck in the small appreciation of the emotion that the linear mind has, which really just wants to get out of pain. Now, that's all it's really interested in.
Yes, I was really struck by the role that intuition plays in your work. This is something that many psychiatrists would be loath to talk about, I think. Yet you had a variety of experiences early in your life that made it clear that you have a very open, intuitive channel. Perhaps you could share with our listeners the story of Eric, the dashing British businessman your parents introduced you to. I hope you remember that story in your book.
Oh, I remember it very well. I tell some of these stories in Emotional Freedom to really get across to people, you know, what it's like as a child to experience these kinds of energies and emotions, and you know how we are sensitive people. And so many times people have blocked out these intuitive experiences early on. But I was a very intuitive child, and I would predict things as a child, and I would be able to sense energies around people. And my parents finally forbade me to ever mention my intuitions at home again. So I grew up believing there was something wrong with me because I was never really validated in that way. And so Emotional Freedom is really a vehicle for me to express my voice, which is clear and powerful now and not afraid, to bring intuition into, you know, the emotional realm. But the experience with Eric was when I was a child, my parents were friendly with this man named Eric, who was this dashing businessman. He was handsome, he was British, he was rich, and he would come and, you know, pick up my parents in a Rolls Royce, and they would go off to parties, and I would sense him, and I would get afraid, and I would get put off. And, you know, it was very nonverbal. It was just an energy and a sadness, a deep, deep sadness and a danger that I felt from him. And I told my parents, oh, you know, I felt this. And they said, oh, honey, how can you say that? You don't even know him. You know, or there's nothing to back this up. And so, you know, I didn't want to feel anything negative about their friends. It wasn't something volitional. And so, you know, some time passed, and then it turned out that Eric committed suicide unexpectedly because nobody ever knew about his depression. He didn't speak about it. And so I was able to pick that up with my intuition on an energetic level, you know, very early on. And it isn't something a child wants to be able to predict.
That's right.
It really isn't. But I was able and am able as a psychiatrist now to sense energy around people with help switch diagnosis and treatment. But as a child, I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't have any guidance. And so people can use emotional freedom. Parents can use emotional freedom to help their children. People in healthcare can use it to learn how to sense energy, because I really go into it with each emotion, how to sense the energy of fear, how to sense the energy of courage. What does it feel like in the body? I wanted to really take people by the hand and tell them how to do this. This isn't by any means only something I can do. And I don't want to put that out.
Yes, yes. Now, that experience that you just told us about happened to you when you were 12. Was there an intuitive experience you had later on that persuaded you to start trusting your intuition in your clinical practice, to be more boldly out in the open with it?
Well, I had an experience when I first opened up my practice in Century City, where I had a very traditional practice. It was in the early 80s. I had graduated UCLA, my residency there in psychiatry, and I had very booming practice and lots of inpatients, and I gave out lots of medications. And I had a patient who was named Christine, and she came in with a major depression. I medicated her with an antidepressant. She got so much better. And over a period of time, she really began to blossom. And it was one day during a session that I was sitting with her. My office is on the 18th floor of a medical building. And I looked out at the sky and I saw a cloud. And I remember getting lost in the cloud. And I went into a kind of trance state. And in that trance state, I had a very clear knowing that she was going to make a suicide attempt. And it had nothing to do with anything she was clinically presenting me with. Everything was pointing to being better over a sustained period of many months. And so I didn't choose to even bring the subject up with her because I didn't think there was any truth to it. And within a couple of weeks, she overdosed on the antidepressants that I prescribed for her and ended up in a coma in a hospital in Los Angeles. And so that was really my wake-up call, where I knew that as a responsible physician, I had to incorporate intuition into my practice because I felt that by not listening, I had done her harm. And that was unbearable to me.
Yes.
And so she survived, after a couple of weeks, she did come out of coma and we continued working together, thank God. But, you know, that was really my wake-up call. I knew even though I was afraid of what my peers would think, I didn't know how to bring intuition into practice. I didn't know anything at the time, but I knew I had to do it. So that was my wake-up call.
Yes, I can see that. Another thing that I think is rather atypical for a psychiatrist are the references throughout the book to the fact that you have a spiritual teacher. How did you meet your spiritual teacher, and how did you know that he was, quotes, right for you?
Well, throughout Emotional Freedom, I make references to my spiritual teacher, who's a Taoist. And Taoism is a very simple path. It's about learning how to meditate, learning how to center yourself in the midst of chaos, learning about the power of the heart and subtle energies and the forces of nature being in balance and being of service. And it's not a structured path, which I like, because I don't respond to rules or structure. But it's a very powerful path between just me and my altar, you know, where I meditate at my altar and light my candles, and I tune in and I open up and to something larger than myself over and over again over many, many years. So it's my meditation practice. But the way I met my meeting a spiritual teacher is like trying to find a soulmate. You know, you can look and look and look and you may never find one, but then there all of a sudden they are. It's very hard. It's like it's a meant to be kind of thing.
Yes.
And I found him actually through a massage therapist at the time who mentioned, this Taoist teacher's in town and he's giving meditation sessions. And my teacher's a Chinese Malaysian man. He doesn't live here. And so, you know, I went and I knew. I looked into the pools of his eyes, and I knew. I had never felt anything like that in my entire life, that sense of connection, that sense of I knew.
Wow.
And it's been, you know, over 20 years that I've been studying with him, and it's, you know, been one of the most important things in my life. And I feel, you know, that every psychiatrist or every therapist, you know, could benefit from having a spiritual teacher, too, in addition to their training programs.
Sure.
I think it's very important.
Yeah. Well, spirituality is one of those terms that can mean such different things to different people. And you do, it is a thread that runs throughout the book and throughout your work. For our listeners, what do you mean by spirituality?
Well, spirituality is being able to get beyond the mind and connect with a force of the heart, however you define it. And It can be religion, or it can be nothing. It could be love. It can be nature. It could be nameless. It's an energy. It's a connection of a great sense of heart that goes beyond the linear mind. And in terms of the book and developing emotional freedom, it is a core principle because you can't deal with emotions just with the mind alone or just in traditional psychotherapy alone. I don't feel that it gets to the root of how to transform energies, how to transform fear with courage, how to transform anger with compassion. You have to tune into something larger as you go to get a wider perspective and to bring a much deeper sense of heart and vision into what you're going through. Otherwise, you can't see it. You cannot see clearly what you're going through. And so I help all my patients to find a sense of spirit, however they define it. I mean, I had one patient who I wrote about in the book whose husband was killed after a mugging, And she had been very religious before that. And after that, she swore never to believe in God again. Never. You know, or never, never. And so, you know, I of course, wasn't going to argue with her. You know, she absolutely has that right. But it was interesting, as we worked together through the grieving process, she was able to find a great satisfaction in being of service to other victims of violent crimes. And she was able to be able to share her support and love with that, which she considers her sense of spirit now, being able to give to others. But she has never used the word God again, and nor does she have to. But she was able to find something. And it's still evolving, you see, but people have to find their own way. Now, I've worked with nuns who are in recovery from alcoholism who have told me fantastic stories about how before they got sober, you know, they didn't have a God, but they had to pretend they did because it would have been shameful not to. They were, you know, had gone through everything. They were living in the convent. And so it was only through recovery from alcoholism and finding a higher power that really made sense to them for the first time in their life that their spiritual life was kindled. You see, so in emotional freedom, I'm talking about spirituality as a sense of deep heart and compassion that you could connect with in the middle of the night when your mind is swirling, when you're afraid, when you can't sleep. It has to be real. It can't just be a figment of your imagination or intellectual. It has to be an experience of breathing, centering, opening up to something larger than the mind. And in emotional freedom, I go through each emotion and how this relates to it. Because otherwise, you're stuck in the smallness of the emotion and the smallness of how your mind perceives it. And that's a pretty small place. You can't get to the expanded vision of what you're going through without intuition, which helps you connect with spirit, you know, or finding something larger. You cannot get there with your mind. And I think that's where people end up bumping up a lot against walls. You know, they try and understand spirit. You know, they say, oh, it doesn't exist because they're trying to intellectualize it. Of course it doesn't exist there. It exists from the heart. And that's the essence of Taoism.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense to me. I was also struck by the importance you place on sleep and dreaming. It kind of came as a surprise. I hadn't expected to encounter that in this book, but it's of special interest to me because I've long taught a course on myth, dream, and symbol, and have long kept a dream journal as well. And you have some very original ways of writing about dreams. There's so many books out there about dreams, and so I found much of your writing and thinking just you had an original twist on things that I really admired. For example, you say dreams are revolutionary states of consciousness that impart intuitive wisdom about how to be free. And you say dreams are naked truth. Get ready for it. Dreams are the fast track to freedom. Well, let me have you expand on this a bit for us.
Well, dreams are my fondest love. I've been writing down my dreams since I've been a little girl. You know, I have dream journals in my closets all piled up. So it's so lovely to hear you're teaching a course on dreams. It's beyond me how people are still analyzing, academics are still analyzing whether or not dreams have meaning. You know, just...
I know, it's absurd.
Beyond me. I don't get it. But I guess the linear mind is so small, you know, they're always trying to find a reason why something doesn't work. But dreams allow you to bypass the ego and get into pure intuitive truth. And there's a technique I use in emotional freedom in terms of remembering dreams where you ask a question before you go to sleep, and it could be, you know, why am I depressed? Or how can I get out of depression? You know, how can I let go of my anger towards my mother? How can I feel better about losing my job and moving forward towards a creative solution? Whatever your question is, ask one before you go to sleep at night. And then in the morning, don't talk to anyone for a couple of minutes at least, and just lay there between sleep and waking, recovering whatever material from the dream you can. Write it down in a journal, and it doesn't have to be a long dream. It could be one image.
Right.
It could be a black chair, you know, or it could be an emotion. It could be anxiety. Whatever it is, that's your gift, you know, and you work with it, and you apply the answer to the question. So it's really creative problem solving to really get to the bottom of the emotions that are blocking you, so you can have more joyous emotions. And there was a great science study in Science magazine where they showed that in order to make complex decisions that were good, you have better results if you sleep on the question rather than make the decision before you go to sleep. And so they felt that the dreaming and the sleep process helped make better decisions when it came to complex decisions. And so, you know, this is great that a scientific journal has backed this up. You know, however, this is something I've known since I was a little girl, and many people do who listen to their dreams, and you see only good things come out of it. And in the book, I present nightmares as a path to awakening. You know, I know they're scary. I know they're difficult to have, but, you know, the point of having them is to look at what they're trying to tell you so you can awaken. And once you deal with whatever it is that you need to deal with, then the dream stops recurring. You know, for instance, if you have a dream that you're being chased on the edge of a cliff by a malevolent pursuer and you're scared and you feel horrible and you feel like you're going to be killed, whatever it is, then you wake up. You know, it's so tempting to say, oh, I'm so happy this was only a dream. No, but in my approach in emotional freedom, I say, go back, find out who that pursuer is. Now, don't let yourself be pursued by some dark force. Just, you know, it's not going to go away. You're going to keep having that dream over and over again until your deathbed, unless you look at it. And the point is compassion. It's your consciousness compassionately bringing up areas that can free you if you look at it. So it depends on your perspective. When you look at these dreams, if you look at them as, oh, they're just tormenting me, then you're not going to get anything out of it. If you look at it as, how can this help awaken and free me? And what do I need to deal with to, you know, clear that dark force? Maybe it was my abusive father. You know, maybe it was a boyfriend who betrayed me. You know, maybe it was, you know, my mother who was an alcoholic. Who knows what it was? Everybody's got some dark force chasing them.
Sure.
So, but you find out what yours is without shame. And, you know, the essence of the message of emotional freedom is self-compassion. These are hard areas to look at. You know, these require a lot of courage to go in and say, okay, you know, I'm going to deal with this dark force. I know that. But as you do, you need to show yourself compassion and talk to yourself like you're the most beautiful little child in the world, you know, who needs support. You know, you have to learn to develop positive self-talk as you go through this, and also have support of others around you who can lift you up, too. You know, that's important.
Right.
Very important.
Right. How have dreams helped in your own life? We were talking about self-disclosure earlier. I'm wondering if there is a dream that kind of stands out for you as having played an important role.
Well, there are two dreams, very quickly. One, you know, when I was in my 20s and I was working in the towel department in the May Company and living with my boyfriend in Venice Beach, I had a dream in which a voice came to me and told me to get my MD in order to have the credentials to legitimize intuition in medicine. And this was at a time when I had no desire to become a doctor. Mm. I was very creative. I was, you know, writing, and I didn't have any career path, actually. I was just kind of living day to day, and I had dropped out of college. But I had this dream. And so on the basis of the dream, I re-enrolled in Santa Monica City College just to take one class. And, it, you know, it just turned out one became two, became 14 years of medical training.
Well, that's taking your dream seriously, I must say.
Let me tell you another one,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, good.
It had to do with writing this book. When I was writing the frustration chapter of Emotional Freedom, as I said before, writing the chapter set the tone for me to experience lots and lots of frustration, you know, which was wonderful and horrible at the same time. But I did, and I learned from it. But I was going through a phase of not being able to write because I was so frustrated. I was experiencing writer's block, and I was pushing and pushing, and nothing was coming out and so forth. And I was tying myself up into a knot. And so I had a dream in which a phone number came through. And so I wrote down all the digits of the phone number in the middle of the night, and then I called it the next day.
Oh, my goodness.
I do that, you know.
That's taking it seriously. It's good.
I totally take it seriously because it's fun. But anyways, I called and the guy answered the phone and he goes, UCLA Labor and Delivery Room. So, you know, that was my healing dream that lightened me up and it told me I was in the zone because I was pushing and prodding and forcing and nothing was working. And so it was, you know, my cosmic humor that comes in through my dream guidance that, you know, helped me to loosen up, you know, and see everything was okay and just relax a little.
What a great story. Have dreams ever helped you in your work with clients? Do you ever, for example, have a dream about a client that helps to open things up?
Oh, all the time. If I'm blocked with a client, I'll ask a question in a dream about what I can do to get through the block. Sometimes I'll be on vacation, I'll be traveling, and I'll get a dream to suddenly call somebody, and I do.
Yeah.
So it's I consult dreams all the time, and if they're offered spontaneously to me, I will look at them too. And sometimes, in rare occasions, I'm actually told in a dream, like, Julie is going to call you, or, you know, forewarning that somebody will call, and then they do. So I always take on that patient because mm-hmm. there's a special connection. So it's I really love to dream, and I take the information very seriously. But in the book, I talk about how to differentiate between psychological dreams, predictive dreams, guidance dreams, so that you can tell the difference, because not all psychological dreams are intuitive dreams. They're about illuminating your psyche and the darker emotions there so you could free yourself. But it's not about, you know, let's say you have a dream that the airplane is going to crash. You know, if you have a fear of being out of control, that's really a dream helping you deal with that fear. It's not about don't go on that airplane to travel to San Francisco.
How do you know when the airplane crash dream is a warning versus a psychological issue?
Well, I go through in the fear chapter how to differentiate intuition from fear. And so it's important that everyone look at that list. But basically, intuitions come through almost in a non-emotional way. They have very little charge to it, or else they come through compassionately. Whereas fear is very highly charged. And also, intuitions generally aren't connected to your top five major issues, so that's why that you need to work with. So I suggest that people make a list of what are the top five things that scare me. Mm-hmm. You know, is it abandonment? Is it lack of success? Is it poor health? Whatever it is, so that those dreams are probably not predictive. They're probably your issues that you get to work with.
Okay, that's fascinating. Now, this isn't an advice show. At the same time, though, I know from my listener emails that many out there are struggling with various personal issues and are looking for some guidance. And I think your book has a lot to offer in that regard, especially in part two, which you've titled Your Tools for Liberation. So I'd like to kind of step through those. First, you talk about the importance of facing fear and building courage. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I divide the book into two kinds of emotions. One are I'm calling more positive, and one I'm calling more negative. And there are a number of emotions that are derived from love, and those include courage, patience, compassion, connection, self-esteem, whereas the negative emotions all come from fear. Fear is the mother of all negative emotions. And so frustration, anger, envy, jealousy, loneliness, all of that is derived from fear. So in each chapter, I go through a different emotion. And in the first chapter, I go through how to transform fear with courage. I mean, how many of us have been taught to develop courage? And what that is, energetically, intuitively, psychologically, and neurobiologically. You know, I go through all of those sections in each emotional chapter so that I provide biological techniques to counter fear and build courage. What do you do? You know, how do you turn off your fight or flight response and all the cortisol and adrenaline that's surging through your system to create a relaxation response where you can have endorphins, the natural painkillers flowing through your system. How do you harness your biology to counter fear? All right. I go through that in the book. Very important skill. As I think people too readily turn to medication before learning how to work with their own biology more actively.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the biological aspects of each emotion is very important, as are the spiritual aspects. For instance, with fear, you have to ask yourself, how is this fear helping me to spiritually grow? Why did I have an abusive mother? You know, is it just to torment me, or what can I learn from it? Can I learn to believe in myself more? Can I learn to have a more open heart? Can I learn to be more loving with my children? You know, what is it that I can learn from this experience? And how can I keep learning rather than shutting down? So you have to ask yourself that with each fear. And then I go into what is the energy of the fear and how can I transform the energy? So I ask everyone in the book with each emotion, but with fear, listen to how fear feels in your body. The body is a key intuitive receptor. Now, how does it feel? Where do you register it? Do you register it in your solar plexus? Do your shoulders tense up? Do you get a migraine? Do you feel it as a constriction in your back? You know, really, I walk through readers through how to ascertain the energetic signs so that you can catch them early. The whole point is with the energy of emotions is that you can really train yourself to catch what's happening early so you can shift it rather than, you know, a week later knowing that you're riddled with fear and suddenly, you know, you have a terrible stomach ache, you know, that you can't get rid of. So it's the energy of fear or the energy of any emotion, it's important for you to really experiment in your body with how it feels. I worked a lot with envy. That was one emotion that I worked with a lot over the years. Not jealousy, but in the envy chapter, you know, I talk about observing the energy of envy and how it was like a hot acid rushing through my system when I would want what somebody else had.
Yes.
You know, that kind of feeling is horrible and constricting and hot as compared to loneliness, let's say, which has a different energy. It's more of an aching hollow echo in my body. So I go through in each emotion what the energies feel like so that you could transform them with your counterpart. For instance, transforming envy with self-esteem. You know, I consider the root of all envy low self-esteem, and that from a spiritual point of view, it's totally irrelevant to compare your life with somebody else's because you're given all the tools you need to work with for your soul's growth. But the mind, you know, that trickster wants to compare you with someone else and tell you that you're less than or you're not getting something. Now, I had it with a particular issue about being on the New York Times bestseller list. I was always jealous of people, you know, friends, of people I like, who get on this list because I never got on it.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was very human, but it wasn't something I wanted to continue because, you know, my spiritual teacher says a good human being is somebody who recognizes their negative side but chooses to come from their positive side. And that's who I want to be. And so working the techniques in emotional freedom have helped me. And over the years, I've gotten so much better. And some of the techniques I've used to work with my own envy is to pray for the person or wish, you know, well for the person who I'm envious of.
Yes.
You know, pray for their happiness. Even if I don't want to, the mind doesn't want to do that, you see. And here's that dichotomy again, but the intuition knows that it's a good thing.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, your heart knows it's a good thing and it will free you. You know, you want to be free. When I'm in the clutches of envy, I'm small and I'm unhappy and I'm not in my empowered self. But when I can actively do my darndest to shift out of it, then I grow larger again. And it's a little, you know, period over years that I've worked with it. And so what's so great about this book is, you know, I actually did get on the New York Times bestseller list for emotional freedom. I know, yay, but I've had all those years to work with my own envy, you know, which was great, really, because I've not totally healed, but I'm so much better than I was.
Yeah, yeah. I love the sort of yin-yang pairings that you came up with, you know, for sort of the negative emotion and the positive state that could be transformed into. For example, you talk about frustration and transforming frustration and disappointment into patience.
Absolutely. I love that chapter. It was the most frustrating chapter. and the one with the most patience, too, because I got to practice patience as I was writing the chapter. And patience, I am just so impressed with patience. If you Google patience, what you will find is an astounding fact, and that is that every world religion agrees on the fact that patience is an incredible spiritual attribute. I mean, getting all world religions to agree on anything is like impossible. But this is one thing that they agree on. And patience is listening to your intuition for right timing of when to act. It's not the mind pushing, I'm not getting what I want, so I'm going to push harder. You know, that energy, it's not that. It's about falling into your intuition and waiting for right timing, whether your mind likes it or not. So again, it's a dichotomy between what the mind wants and what the intuition tells you to do. And there's an exercise that I practice, and I suggest everyone practice to develop patience, is to stand in the longest, most irritating line you can find. You know, go to the market, go to the DMV, that's the real big one, or government agency.
Yes.
You know, that's the really frustrating one. But stand there and do it in a different way. You know, be able to let somebody go in front of you instead of bearing down, rushing, pushing, nasty, upset, irritable. Let someone go in front of you. Do it with a big heart. Make space in the line. Be cheerful. Create a different energy. Be nice to your fellow line waiters. and see what happens. Because it might sound like a mundane exercise, and it is in a way, but what happens is you feel amazing. The person who you let in front of you looks like you gave them $1 million, and the line moves faster. So I want to give people the experience of actually getting in a line and seeing what that shift of energy does to the whole environment there. You know, it's I in emotional freedom, I really say go out and practice in the mundane world, because we're given everything we need there to practice some of the principles that I'm talking about. So go to the line, do it differently, observe, and the line will move faster, I promise you. But you have to see it. You have to experience this, because to the linear mind, it sounds like a ridiculous exercise.
Yeah.
Who wants to do it? But to the intuition, no, this is very exciting.
What a generous universe to provide us with so many opportunities for personal growth.
Yeah, right. That's what the intuition says, but the mind goes, that's ridiculous. What kind of statement is that?
Yes, right. I'm sure some of my listeners are going that way too.
Who wants to wait in a line? I mean, that's the mind. But
yeah.
What I'm saying in emotional freedom, you have more inside of you than the mind. That's why I keep drawing that dichotomy in this interview, because of course the mind is going to say, I don't want to be depressed, or I don't want to go through the loss of a child, or I don't want to stand in a long line, you know, or I don't want to forgive someone who has harmed me. That is the mind, you see, but we have to establish a new paradigm for communication, and that's what I'm presenting in emotional freedom, is a different way of doing it.
Yes.
If it attracts you. If it doesn't attract you, don't do it. But if it attracts you, this is a different way of looking at emotion.
I think one of the most difficult and pervasive and painful emotions is loneliness. Yet
yes.
You suggest that there is a positive message inherent in it.
Well, yes. I've worked a lot with loneliness in myself. I always felt for the longest time I didn't belong here on this planet, that this wasn't my home. You know, really deep, deep feeling as a child. And I always thought, you know, a spaceship was going to come and land and take me away somewhere to my real home.
Right.
And I know a lot of people feel that way because they tell me. But I present loneliness in emotional freedom as the point-counterpoint to connection. And loneliness has three parts to it that I describe in the book. One, it comes from a disconnect with the self, first and foremost. Second, it comes from a disconnect with spirit. And third, it comes from a disconnect with other people. So it's not just, I'm lonely because I don't have a boyfriend. You know, it's not that. It's, I'm lonely because I feel disconnected with myself, spirit, and nurturing others in my life. And So it's important to look at that, because I know I've had so many patients who come to me and say, oh, my life is so lonely, I want a soulmate. And then when you work with them, you know, you find it's a little bit more complicated than that, you know, because relationships are so beautiful when you can bring your whole self into them. But if you go to a relationship because you're lonely, and let's say you find someone and you feel less lonely when you're with them, what happens if that person is taken away? You know, what happens, you know, then? Then you're lonely again. I mean, the point is you have to find a sense of connection if you want to be free, the kind of freedom I'm talking about and that attracts me. You have to find that sense of connection with yourself and with spirit and then bring that into a relationship.
Yes.
You know, that's such a gift to bring that in as opposed to fill me up.
Yes.
You know, like that, do you ever see that movie, Little Shop of Horrors?
Oh, yeah.
Old movie about
right.
that plant that kept
yeah.
saying, feed me, feed me, feed me. And they kept throwing human beings into this plant, you know, to fill it up. And we don't want to do that, be that plant.
Right. Well, you're being very generous with your time here, and I won't have you give your whole book away, but just let people know that you have a chapter on depression and dealing with that. You've got a chapter on dealing not only with envy, but jealousy, which is a big issue for many people, and also one on dealing with anger. And so as we begin to wind down here, I know you're doing a book tour. I wonder if you have some recent, or not recent, but some appearances coming up that in major cities that people might be interested in if they happen to live nearby.
Yes, on April 8th in Los Angeles, I'm doing a talk at Agape at 7 o'clock, which is in Culver City. And on April 9th, I'm doing a book signing at Barnes & Noble in Huntington Beach at 7 p.m. And then also June 5th through 7th, I'm doing a weekend workshop at Kripalu Institute in Lenox, Massachusetts, in the beautiful Berkshires, on awakening intuition and emotional freedom. And all this information is on my website, which is drjudithorloff.com. Now, as is a special offer for the book, when you get a copy of the book, you get 100 free gifts from friends of mine who are teachers, such as Neil Donald Walsh, Christiane Northrup, and many, many others. They're downloadable gifts, such as teleseminars and book excerpts and videos and CDs. So it's a special offer that's kind of celebrating the release of emotional freedom.
Oh, how neat. I'll be sure to put a link to that, to your website, in my show notes as well. Well, Dr. Judith Orloff, you've been so gracious with your time, and I want to thank you so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're very welcome.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Judith Orloff. As you can tell, this is a book I recommend, especially if you're facing some difficult life challenges. Even if you aren't, and who isn't, you could benefit from the reminders she provides. Who among us would not benefit from transforming fear into courage, frustration and disappointment into patience, loneliness into connection, depression into hope, jealousy and envy into greater self-esteem, and anger into compassion? To give you a better feel for the practical and conversational approach of the book, let me read a passage to you in which she tells a great story about the power of words. The story picks up as she's visiting her sick father in the hospital and happens to look out the window toward the street where her car is parked. She writes, "While looking out the window onto Ocean Avenue, I did a double take. Across the street, I saw my white Volkswagen convertible where I'd parked it, but there were these teenagers dressed like gang members jiggling the lock of the driver's side, attempting to break in. I couldn't believe it. Everything in me rallied. This wasn't going to happen. I charged down the stairs of Ocean Villa. I could hear the manager's voice fading. 'Do you think you should go out there?' I didn't think. I just went. In the 2 minutes it took me to reach my car, they'd stolen my radio. A muscle-bound, tattooed kid smoking a cigarette was holding it on his lap in the back seat of his car, gloating. He was flanked by two husky girls with some serious mascara and sizable hair who looked even more intimidating. You'd think I would have been a basket case, but amazingly, I was the picture of composure. Not angry, not frightened, just calm. I intuitively knew what to do and did it, a feat I credit to years of meditation practice spontaneously kicking in. I looked straight at this guy who would have scared the bejesus out of a sane person and said, "If you give me the radio back, I won't call the police." Where that sentence came from, I do not know. It sounded laughably naive when I was saying it. Even so, my tone was gentle, firm, even loving, and remarkably without blame. I surprised myself as I listened. Miracles do happen. The next thing I knew, he was handing over the radio, flailing wires and all. I'll never forget how shockingly obedient he seemed, like a puppy just wanting to please. I smiled, I thanked him. Then, muffler roaring, that lowrider Chevy drove away. In hindsight, I realize how foolish and dangerous my actions were. I was risking my life for a blasted radio. Get real. These kids could have harmed me. But in the crazed, altered state of slowly losing my father, I instinctively needed to take back control. I couldn't allow anything more to be stolen from me. I'm well aware that there might have been a very different outcome had my tone been demanding, angry, or fearful. This drama complements of Life 101 hammered home the influential energy of words and tone, how they can turn negativity around, how words are peacemakers with adversaries and can create outcomes that seem inconceivable.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, here's Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
I hope you went to our website to look at the photos on the page there celebrating our 200th podcast last episode. You would have seen the photo of young Australian listener Brad Jacobson proudly wearing his Shrink Wrap Radio t-shirt. I had been about to pull the ad for those t-shirts off the site, but seeing him in his tee has given me new vigor, or as John F. Kennedy used to say, vigor. Remember, I don't make a penny off those shirts, but the thought of listeners proudly wearing them, helping to promote the show, certainly warms my heart. The summer weather is here, at least in the U.S., and I say it's time to treat yourself to a t-shirt. Speaking of helping to promote the show, please do mention it to your friends, colleagues, family, and so on. And I really appreciate it when you mention it on your blog, Facebook, or Twitter. I seem to be gathering more friends on Twitter, and you can follow my tweets at twitter.com/shrinkwrapradio. And if you haven't done so already, please add yourself to our Frapper map. You'll find a link on our site, or you can simply go to frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio. The latest addition to our community there is fellow podcaster and Podio book author Grizzly Smith from Duluth, Minnesota, who says of Shrink Wrap Radio, "Always nice to find intelligent content in the podosphere." Thanks for that, Grizz, and I totally agree. Be sure to check out my other podcast series at wisecounselpodcast.com, where there's an interview with Dr. Thomas Joyner about his theory on why people commit suicide. Remember, Shrink Wrap Radio is part of the ProMed Network and also sciencepodcasters.org, where you'll find selected episodes on those sites as well. And by the way, if you're not subscribed to Shrink Wrap Radio, it costs you nothing to do so. It just means the episodes get automatically delivered to you, and it does help me to track our audience size. The easiest way to subscribe is through iTunes. And there is a subscription link to iTunes in the right-hand gutter area of the Shrink Wrap Radio website. Speaking of iTunes, if you love this show and you haven't posted a review on iTunes, please do so. That's one of the things that keeps us on the front page of their higher education shows. Also, if you haven't made a donation, please consider doing so. My goal is to at least reach $500 a month in donations. The month of February saw $65 in donations for the whole month. Fortunately, March jumped up to $225, in part due to a generous $100 lump sum donation. Donations of any amount help, and supporting donations of $5 or $10 per month are especially appreciated. Also helpful is your patronage of our sponsors using the discount links on our site for GoDaddy, PetMeds.com, Brookstone, and Budget Car Rentals. You'll find a big green donate button on our site along with links to our sponsors.
Hi, this is Patricia Garfield from Tiburon, California, at the IASD Dream Conference, and you're in a lucid dream with Dr. Dave.
Thanks to noted dream author Patricia Garfield for that transition. I really should do an interview with her at some point. She's been on my to-do guest list for some time. Well, let's hear what our listener community has to say by dipping into the old mailbag. First, let's start with an update from Tom Lindquist about his ongoing experience with the Holosync CDs.
Hello again, Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio listeners. First of all, congratulations, Dr. Dave, on your 200th episode. I'm here with my second Holosync meditation report. I have now been using the system for about 1 month. In the first 2 weeks of using the system, the instructions say to use it for a half hour daily. But after 2 weeks, I have now been using it for a full hour and find it much more effective. I also find it more effective for me in the evenings as I'm more awake in comparison to the mornings. Overall, I do have an increased level of confidence and I feel more calm throughout the day. I'm also a little more aware of my surroundings and my environment. A big change for me is that I also feel more equipped to go into a stressful situation. Recently, a coworker commented that I was the only one at the lunch table that looked awake, so possibly my levels of energy have gone up. I think that's it for now. I do enjoy using the system still and have been consistent. I hope to come back in the future with another update, so keep meditating. Until next time, bye-bye.
Tom, thanks for that report. And I should hasten to add that Holosync is not a sponsor, though maybe they should be. Actually, I've contacted the creator of that program, Bill Harris, about being a guest on a future episode. So far, we've been playing phone tag, but I'm sure we'll speak soon. Here's another voicemail that I think I may have forgotten to play last time.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Shrink Wrap Radio Podcast. Happy birthday to you. Hi, Dr. Dave. This is Andy Hunt from Practical Wellbeing. I apologize for the singing, and I promise I will never do it again. But I just had to wish you all the best for your 200th edition. It's a fantastic job of work you've done, and the shows are always interesting and informative. It's a great thing you're giving to the rest of the world. Thanks a lot. All the best now. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that, Andy Hunt of Practical Wellbeing. And also, thank you for your ad on our Top Links widget, which I keep forgetting to promote. Andy's an NLP practitioner, and for a mere one-time $20 PayPal donation on our site, you can advertise your website or blog for months and months, as Andy has done. Just go to the Top Links widget and click on the arrow at the bottom that says Add Your Link Here. Next, we hear from Joe, who writes, just wanted to say I enjoyed your Zodiac Killer's Letters series posted on YouTube. I requested a copy of your book from my library. I've been a minor Zodiac enthusiast for a while and have tried, sans success, decoding the uncracked cipher. I'm currently working on my dissertation. When that's finished, I plan to go back to it. Anyway, just wanted to say how much I enjoyed your YouTube series. Take care, Joe. And Joe is referring to the book that I co-authored, This is the Zodiac Speaking Into the Mind of a Serial Killer, and also a series that I posted on YouTube, which you can take a look at too if you're interested. somewhat synchronistically, in relation to the HoloSync bit that I played earlier, Justin writes to ask about HoloSync. Hello, Dr. Dave. I'm a psychology major and a hypno junkie, and I've just recently gotten into the podcast scene. I've listened to the last 10 episodes or so, and they have certainly been interesting. I listened to the one with Sarah Hanna Radcliffe the other day and was interested in what she called, and he spelled it, HoloSync. I may be spelling it wrong, I'm not sure. I tried for quite a while to find some information online, but came up with next to nothing. In fact, the only concrete message I found at all was a question someone had posted about it way back in 2002, which, not surprisingly, did not receive a response. If you have any information on this, I would like to check it out, at least to satisfy my own curiosity. As a side note, I tend to agree with your theory on her own placebo effect. I suppose in a study this would be considered to be part of the experimenter effect. Additionally, it seemed as if most of the therapists she described relied heavily on hypnotic techniques and just added additional features such as the tapping. Thanks in advance and keep up the good work, Justin. And I did reply to Justin and send him the correct spelling on HoloSync, which others of you might be mystified about as well. And that spelling is HoloSync. If you Google it, you should be able to find the site, which is probably holosync.com. But I'm not certain about that right now. Next, we hear from Matt, who writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. Randomly came across your podcast recently while searching iTunes for Dr. Daniel Amen. Great podcast. My wife and I really enjoyed them. Would love to hear an interview with Dr. John Kilstrom. Have you had any luck getting him back? At least you still have the transcript of your questions. Thanks for sharing, Matt. And he's in Boston. And yes, Matt, I was able to get that interview with Dr. John Kilstrom. After failing to record it the first time, he was generous enough to grant a second interview, and that interview is now up on Wise Counsel if you haven't found it already. And, very fascinating interview. The next one reads, Dear Dr. Dave, I just wanted to say what a big fan of the show I am. I graduated from Sonoma State University in 2007, but unfortunately never had you as an instructor. I was first introduced to your show by Dr. David Sowerby in 2006 and have been an avid listener ever since. I should insert here that Dr. David Sowerby is a good friend, and he was, in fact, my very first guest on Shrink Wrap Radio. Jamie goes on to write, I'm currently finishing up my master's degree in social research at City University of New York, Hunter College. New York City has been such a great journey, but I can't wait to move back to the rolling green hills of California once I graduate. I'm also great friends with Barbara McKenzie, who never fails to give you thanks for giving her the opportunity of being a teaching assistant. Best wishes to you and the show, Jamie. And Jamie, if you're listening, I'm teaching that course on myth, dream, and symbol once again after a 3.5-year hiatus. And fortunately, Barbara McKenzie came back, and she is my teaching assistant once again. The next one reads, Dr. Dave, I'm about a year behind on the podcast, so I don't know if this is still relevant. I heard you say that you hadn't done an interview with someone who does focusing. I looked through the rest of the shows and it appears as if you still have not done an interview on focusing. However, my mom does focusing, has a PhD in clinical psych, and has been in private practice for about 30 years. If you want to know more, email me back and I'll get in touch with her for you. And that's from Joseph. And so I did get back to Joseph, and he put me in touch with his mom. And by the way, focusing refers to a psychotherapeutic technique developed by Dr. Eugene Gendlin some years back. And Joseph's mom declined. She said I could probably find somebody who was more authoritative than she was. And indeed, I do have several people that I can call upon, and in fact, I think I sent out an invitation to somebody. I have to check up on that and see if they ever got back to me. Joseph, you're right. I should do something on focusing, and I definitely plan to. The next email, and the final one here, and it's a good one to wrap up on, says, it's from Karen, and she says, well, I finally did it. After wanting to make a donation to your podcast for almost a year, I finally remembered to do it. I was downloading some of your new podcasts on iTunes, and I thought, this guy, you, is just amazing. The information I've gotten from you has been invaluable. I refer to you just as much as NPR, and that's saying a lot. So I made a donation and will continue to make more as funds become available. Keep reminding people to do it, because everyone should. If I had to pay outright for it, I definitely would. You are the best, Dr. Dave. Keep up the great work. Warmly, Karen. And Karen, it was that email, I think, that encouraged me to give the big pitch for donations that I gave earlier. So I think that better wrap it up for the email portion for today. I was always a dog person, but now we have a cat. Or perhaps I should say, a cat has us. If you have a pet, you know that their medications can cost you a bundle. Now you can automatically save 10% plus get free shipping on orders over $39 by following the Pet Meds link on our page at shrinkwrapradio.com. So that will wrap it up for today. I've really been suffering from allergies lately. Can you hear it in my voice? Well, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And remember that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod. Alternatively, you're encouraged to leave voice messages using the My Chingo button on Shrink Wrap Radio's website. And you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks to my guest, Judith Orloff, for sharing about energy psychiatry and her new book on emotional freedom. And at this point, I'm not sure what I'll have on the next episode, but I'll make sure it's something good. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.